College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beltway Blitz time here on The Fan. Spin you around the DMV. What's going on in the world of sport? We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. And be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We are Grant and Danny right here on The Fan. Linnell in for GP. Let's get you started, please, on the diamond. Our guy that wears all the hats, including the hat of Bustin' Loose Baseball, one of the preeminent podcasts talking about Nationals baseball, our guy Toby Altizer. Toblerone, Miguel Cairo got a win last night. Yay!
It was good to see you, Danny. And the thing that I liked is some excitement from the ball club, wearing the Uncle Slam hat, stuff like that. I don't know where that had gone, but it seemed like there was some exuberance from the guys again. Mackenzie Gore got some run support for the first time, it feels like, all year. So it was a good win for the guys.
Toby, Michael Soroka on the bump tonight for DC. The last couple of starts for him have been eh. Is he or any of the other veterans on this team, you think, do they have any value coming up in the trade deadline in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think Finnegan will. I mean, when you look at a reliever who's been, I would say, reasonably reliable, and I mean, maybe the underlying metrics aren't as good, but overall, you look at his numbers, you would take that from a closer. So I would say that Kyle Finnegan would have some value. I'd be interested in Soroka's value because, you know, a team like the Dodgers, say, they could use some starters because of all the injuries that they've had in the rotation. But Soroka's also been pretty effective in his time out of the pen. So could you maybe end up trading for him if you're L.A. and then moving him to the pen when you get some of the guys back, like they got Glasnow back? I think it'd be interesting to see. I would think Amed Rosario has some value as well. He can absolutely demolish lefties, can play multiple defensive positions. So I think those three specifically. I think the interesting part here is now with Mike Rizzo, no longer the general manager of the team, he's the one that pulled the trigger on the Nathaniel Lowe trade. And the numbers guys at Nationals Park haven't always been as big on Nathaniel Lowe, DeBartolo being one of those numbers guys. Do they consider trading him with a year left of control next year? So I think those are the four guys to watch out for.
It was Miguel Cairo's first win. I know a lot of people feel like changing the manager isn't going to, you know, provide any immediate changes or differences. If there was a move to the lineup to be made, what would it be? And do you foresee something happening there?
I don't see anything crazy happening, Linnell. I mean, look, Cairo's with the left hand or right hand guy of Davey, and I don't think he's going to suddenly come in here and make swooping changes. If there was anything that I would change, and I don't know that I'd do it right away, but I'd see how it continues to play out over the next couple of weeks, is maybe you lead Wood off so that he has some protection in the lineup, because the only guy that I think would be reasonably intimidating to a lineup would be our opposing pitcher would be C.J. Abrams. So do you consider flipping those two and just seeing if you can give Wood some protection that way, so that way when you're facing some better ball clubs in the second half that have things to play for, it's not just throw up the four fingers every time James Wood walks to the plate.
Tobes, mentioned Mackenzie Gore here. Last night, good to see seven punchies as he threw six innings of one-run ball. The strikeout numbers, even though he hadn't been getting hit around a ton, I mean, there was a crooked number against the Dodgers and kind of that grinded start against Detroit where he only struck out two guys. But the strikeout numbers were kind of dipping there if you look at some of the June totals and then kind of the start of July. So that was good to see. What'd you notice different in terms of him being able to close some guys out?
Yeah, I mean, just having nice command, right, and being able to effectively throw each pitch for a strike and being able to get some of that swing and miss. For whatever reason, that hadn't been the case over the last month or so of starts. So it was nice to see him be able to get some of that swing and miss. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm really not worried about the strikeout totals anymore. I mean, it was going to be nice to see if he could stay up at the top of the leaderboard, and he's still in the top five in strikeouts. He's going to stay up there for the rest of the year, just or at least a majority of the year, and in the top 10 or whatnot, just because of the fact that he struck out so many to start the year. But I'll be curious to see if he continues that trend of not striking out as many guys. But Danny, he could strike out nobody. If he's going six innings of one-run ball for the rest of the year, I really don't care what the strikeout totals are. And I think you'll see him get back to more dominance of what we saw earlier in the year. But, yeah, it was good to see some of those swing and misses start to pile back up like we saw earlier in the year last night.
Toby, thank you, buddy. I always appreciate it. There you go. He wanted to say you're welcome. Toby just punted. He's on the radio. He usually knows how that works. I appreciate Toby. Let's hit the NFL sounder, please. Our guy Nate Davis joins us from USA Today to weigh in on all matters of the foosball. Nate, I want to start with this NFLPA, some disgruntlement up at the top, some disagreement, the collusion. What do you make of this thing? What's going on? How significant is it?
Yeah, I mean, Dan, this seems like this could be a little bit wild. There's some stuff out there, but we'll see what happens with Mr. Lloyd Howell in the coming days and weeks. But the conflict of interest thing, obviously, with the players, isn't going to go over very, very well if they find there's more there. The firm he's the consulting for says he didn't have any kind of proprietary information that he wouldn't have. You and I wouldn't have, but still bad look for him.
Nate, the Netflix documentary Quarterback has come out, and Kirk Cousins has highlighted in it, and he made his first public comments about kind of being misled by the Falcons drafting Michael Penix Jr. last year. Is Atlanta really going to go through this entire offseason and enter the regular season with him on the roster, or do you see a trade coming at some point here?
I mean, I don't see a trade coming unless there's a dance. Obviously there has to be a dance partner, but I don't know where that job is right now. So I mean, I think Kirk is, he's not hoping anybody gets hurt, but I think that's probably the scenario that you need to grease the wheels on this, because I mean, the Falcons already paid him $100 million guaranteed. Right. There's no incentive for them just to release him or to trade him and eat the money. So I mean, and I think a team that wants to get him, is either going to have to offer a nice draft pick or they're going to have to be willing to eat a lot of that money. So I think this is one where the Falcons really hold all the leverage, and certainly the circumstances don't warrant a move right now. So I think Kirk is kind of stuck being the backup for this season at least, barring unforeseen circumstances, basically.
What kind of year is J.J. McCarthy going to have in Minnesota?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously – missed last year. I mean, I watched the preseason game last year with the Raiders, Danny, and he looks really good for whatever that's worth, but hasn't played a meaningful game in close to 2 years. But he's effectively a rookie, and they basically put everything around him. So for all the talk we had about Caleb Williams last year, I mean J.J. McCarthy is stepping into a situation where he really isn't lacking for anything in the supporting cast. So I don't know how much that they actually have to ask him to do, which is kind of the same scenario he had at Michigan. He's got to do it under the lights, obviously, in real games. But, I think the support system is there. And I think that maybe, the Vikings who, I mean, personally, I didn't think they were going to have that great a year last year. I don't know that they're going to win 14 games again, but I think that they could be a playoff team if he can manage situations.
Something that happens pretty routinely in the NFL, Nate, is teams going worst to first. My candidate for that, a lot of people look at San Francisco and go, yeah, that's going to be the team. What about the New England Patriots? They had a strong offseason. I'm a big Mike Vrabel guy. Drake May showed a lot of flashes in year number one. What type of shot do you give the Patriots in a loaded AFC?
Not much. I think okay. they'll be better. But I mean, the way you framed it is the worst to first thing. I could maybe buy the Patriots being a wild card team. But, I mean, I think they're – unless Josh Allen gets hurt, I don't see them overtaking the Bills or something going disastrously wrong in Buffalo. I mean, frankly, I think the AFC East of any division probably has the biggest gap between, the presumed favorite and the next best team. So, I like what New England's done, and I think Mike Vrabel's a great coach. So I think that, certainly a great shot. They could double their win total to 8 at least, but I don't see them getting up there to the top of the division this year.
Nate, expectations are a funny thing. We look at a 10-7 Houston team, and if you told the 2021 Houston Texans fans, you'll have two straight years of being 10-7 after they went 4-12, 4-13, 3-13, 3-13-1, they'd probably be doing spin kicks. But because of how good 2023 was, that 24, weirdly, where they won a playoff game, won the division, was looked at as like a bit of a mild disappointment. What are your thoughts on them this year coming in as potential repeat champions in that division?
I'm probably that they'll stay about the same. I think a significant part of their success, and give them credit, Danny, like you said, they turned it around really quickly coming off the years of the Sean Watson debacle, but they're obviously not playing in the strongest division. So that helps and certainly helped last year. And I think when you have to, fire your left tackle, who's here now, and fire your offensive coordinator, and a lot of the other things that happened. That kind of tells you how they felt about what occurred last year. So, TJ Stroud's got to get comfortable in the new offense. There's some new receivers there as well. So, I think there's reason for optimism that it'll feel better than last year. I kind of think it'll probably still be around the same win total. I don't know that they're really ready to break through and compete for a Super Bowl. And I also think it's a bit of a cautionary tale for people here in Washington. Yeah. I mean, like you said, nobody expected much out of the Texans in 2023. Then they made this seismic jump. Obviously, the expectations are going to be huge around the Commanders this year. It's understandable, but I think that they – made a huge leap last year. I wouldn't be surprised if they come back down to maybe the 10 or 11 win level this year and doesn't feel quite as good, even though big picture, it really ought to be.
Nate, thank you as always, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
You got it, dude. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. All right, Kevin Sheehan joining us here for his portion of the Blitz. Kevin, I haven't heard your reaction. Apologies, I've missed it. But your thoughts on the, I guess we're calling them the alternate, even though they're wearing them almost 40% of the games next year at home. And eventually it looks like it's going to be the jersey from a time when you and I were younger and they were really good.
I mean, I think it's great. When I saw them, I just smiled. And that's the championship uniform. It's going to look like our team when it plays in that uniform. You know, just three games this year, and then they're going to wear the black alts for another game. I would guess that it's the Chicago game on Monday night. But I think this is step one towards these becoming permanent. And, you know, it's not the whole, enchilada. I mean, it's not the name. It's not the logo yet. I don't think the logo's dead, Danny. But, I think they got it right. I think they nailed it yesterday.
Kevin, a big question mark that, fans and media members have for this Commanders team entering the offseason is how do they get better at stopping the run? I want to look at the secondary, though, here for a second. Quan Martin has been, praised by this coaching staff all offseason for good reason. What about the safety position opposite Quan Martin, Kevin? I know they brought in Will Harris from New Orleans. Do you expect him to be the guy, or is there a dark horse there that you think could potentially unseat him?
Well, I mean, I think, a couple of things. Number one, they brought in Will Harris to be the Chin replacement. So let's hope he's every bit of what Chin was last year, if not more, and it's half the cost. But I think it's going to be really interesting just the DBs in general, because they're going to be a nickel a lot. That's almost everybody's base now. And, a lot of what they put out there is going to be dependent on what, starting at corner Marshon Lattimore looks like. And can they get to a position where Trey Amos is ready and Sanra still can, move inside. But I would think that the safeties are Martin and Harris to start with, but will we see Percy Butler in the game? Will we see, 40, what was his name? Owens?
Tyler Owens, in the game.
It's creativity defensively, and they're going to have to be really creative and a lot better up front to start with, because stopping the run was a major problem. And they overcame it last year for the most part, but it's tough to do in the NFL over 17 weeks.
Just give me your level of concern, temperature check here on the Terry McLaurin contract situation, Kevin.
No concern. None. I mean, you and Grant and I have talked about this recently.
Yep.
I even if he were a holdout, by the way, it's $50,000 every day he misses, so I guess he would be a hold-in if it comes to that, where he would report but not, participate in activities. But worst case out of all of this is he plays on the last year of his deal. He's certainly not going to hold out at, entering his age 30 season. He's going to play. But I think they'll get it done. And I think, it was going to be tricky going into it because of his age, because of where do you really kind of slot him among the, more recent deals. Is the DK Metcalf deal a deal that he'd love to get, but it seems a little bit out of whack for Washington because maybe Pittsburgh overpaid? They'll come to an agreement. I think so. We should check in with each other once camp starts on the 22nd and the veterans have to be there. But even if it starts with a little bit of a delay, I went back and looked at this. Kittle, Bosa, and Ayuk.
Yeah.
Those deals were all done on August 29th, August 30th, and September 4th. So there's this history in San Francisco, where Adam Peters came from, of waiting it out. And maybe they thought they benefited from waiting it out. So maybe this is just style more than true confrontation.
Either or, it's a mess. Why can't they just get it done, Kevin? I want my wide receiver in camp. I want him getting reps with my quarterback. The other thing for me is this. If it does go down the contentious road and it gets messy and there's a potential of him not being here, how confident are you in the group behind him?
Well, he's going to play, Linnell. They're not trading him. He's not going to hold out, you know, and then have to go through the whole process again next summer. He's under contract. He's got a year left. That's the worst case, is he plays on the last year of his deal, and then they'll figure out what to do in the offseason next year, whether to use the franchise tag or come up with a long-term deal. So I'm not worried about what's behind him. He's going to play in 2025. I just, like you and I think everybody else, would prefer it to be, you know, with the tone of everybody's thrilled with each other. He got the deal he wanted. The team feels, you know, good about the deal they gave him.
Kevin, thank you as always, buddy.
Thanks, Kev.
All right, boys.
There he goes. And that, right there, that is how you bought Wiblets. Three different teams, three interviews. We're going snappy, a couple different questions, guests. We're getting caught up. We're getting you all caught up. That's how we do the old Beltway Blitz. I want to get back to this. We started this about an hour ago, and I want to go a little bit more into it. The team, talking about the Local 53, is trying to exert some pressure on the D.C. City Council. The latest, an article from Axios, the local team, has kind of ramped up their efforts starting this past Tuesday to kind of escalate the rhetoric, right? We know about the July 15th deadline. That's not necessarily something that the council is going to respect, understandable, right? Because that's like 5 days from now. I get it, okay? Well, now they're saying if you don't hurry up, it's not just the Women's World Cup anymore. This could be a very different situation where you no longer control this process at all. We'll explain that, and do you buy it? Is this negotiating or maybe something that's very real? We'll talk about that next.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margo Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got some developing news here as part of the Grant Nanny radio program. And it's going on with Darius. He's doing a lot of things this week. He's got a special sneak preview of Superman before everyone else does. Okay? And he's doing something pretty special. And I'm excited for him. I wish that I could experience this for the first time again.
Yeah.
And we'll tell all of you guys what that is. A little bit later on in the program. But I just found out myself. And I was like, do I throw out the rundown? I don't, but we're going to talk about it. We got a whole thing planned. I'm excited about that. Welcome back to the show. It's Grant Nanny here on The Fan. Linnell in for GP. Appreciate you guys checking us out. 800-636-1067 is the number. So I want to get back to this. We stumbled into this story about the stadium, and the reporting now is starting to leak out more and more. This an Axios story from Kunit Dill, I believe I've got the name correct, works for Axios and has kind of the skinny on what's happening here. And I'll just recap it for you super quick. The RFK Stadium deal that's being discussed, debated, going back and forth, etc. You might see the influence of the federal government, or at least that's being threatened again. Okay, whether that's the White House stepping in, whether it's the federal government through other levers and mechanisms, I didn't quite understand how that would work. It's sort of laid out here in this Axios piece. Their style isn't necessarily the long form. It's a lot of like, you know, sort of bursts. It's like one line, this, and here's your summary, here's that. So you could, the point is, it seems that everyone kind of agrees there is leverage and there is something that the federal government, aka the White House, Trump, whatever, could do to cut the city council out of the deal altogether, cut DC out altogether. The mayor was asked for comment, I think, about this the other day, and she kind of said, I'm not quoting directly, but kind of said, there's a lot of comments. I'm not really worried about that. Let's move on and deal with other stuff, because this was in a sea of other comments that she's got to deal with as the mayor. She's not just the stadium person. She actually has to mayor the city. Anyway, so I'll get you a couple little nuggets here, but DC has a 99-year lease on the RFK Stadium land. But the federal government breaks leases all the time, and Trump could muscle in a new agreement cutting out the city. His involvement could have strings attached, like design tweaks that could delay the project or a million other things. But the team and stadium advocates could simply say, we're tired of waiting, or we don't feel like the writing's on the wall for us to get the stadium, Linnell. We'll just end run you. We'll just go around the other way and make sure this thing gets done, because, frankly, they've tipped their hand.
Yes.
It's not this is where they want to be. It's where they got
to
be.
And I don't like that we've gotten to that point. And it's kind of what I said at the tail end of the last discussion about this. If I was Josh Harris and company, like, I understand it from both sides of the equation. They have done everything absolutely perfectly since they've gotten here to town. From buying us all beers out at the bullpen and to everything that they've done since they've gotten here to town has been smashola A+. If they don't get the team back to Washington, D.C. as they've promised, then it kind of looks like a black eye for Josh Harris and company. How fair is that? I don't know. My thing is this, though. If you're really trying to put the pressure on D.C., which I know that they are based on them trying to go to Trump, but isn't there steps that you're supposed to take before you go tell mom and dad? Like, don't you try to fight back first? To me, like, go talk to Wes Moore. Go talk to Luis Lucas out in Virginia and provide a real threat that you're not just having RFK 2.0 as your only option for a new stadium. And this is where I, continue to reiterate my thoughts. You have given DC a sweetheart deal. You're willing to foot 76% of the bill. I understand the ancillary details about the parking stuff and all that. But bottom line is, you're going to get your community revitalized without having to invest much publicly. I think that should be something that, the city council jumps on. And right now it seems like they're not. If I was Josh Harris and company, I'm saying, hey, look, if you're not going to take our sweetheart deal, maybe D.C. or Virginia or Maryland will.
Or we're still doing D.C., but without you.
But without you.
That's really what cuts to the core of this particular report.
Why is this messy, though, Danny, for them to go through the president? Like, how? Explain that to me.
So it's a little bit above my pay grade. I'm just reading what everyone else is, but I'll do my best. The point is, this has always been the complicated relationship. The federal city, which was established in ratified through amendments, constitution, the whole nine yards, it was supposed to be independent of a state government.
Right.
They always wanted state governments to have their things, state capitals and deals, and then something that was independent in theory from influence from various states. Right. And that's why they put this federal city here. Well, the city needs to operate. The city is a city. People live, breathe, eat, work, sleep, whatever here. So there are residents of D.C. It's right, I can't remember the exact number, but it's always hovers right around a million.
Right.
Could go up, could go down. There are times where it's less, times more, whatever. But there's a lot of people that live in the district. So that needs government. You need a local government for trash pickup, for policing, for everything in between, for schools and the whole nine yards. You have a thing. But then you also have this federal oversight at all times or it's lurking around, right? Where you need the seat of federal government here. That's where Congress, the president, the judiciary, all the headquarters of every commerce department, of every bureaucracy, every chamber is in the district as well. So those are carve-outs. So those aren't part of D.C. in terms of the local D.C. It's part of D.C., the federal D.C.
Right.
And there's always this weird push and pull with who gets what. So there's the National Park Service, but the D.C. Park Service, and this is federal parkland, but that's where D.C. parkland starts. And this droplet of water went off of city parkland, and now it's in federal. The whole thing's a mess. It's always a mess. So we have a more complicated relationship here than everyone else does. It's complicated everywhere to do these kinds of deals. When you're talking about billions of dollars, putting shovels in the ground, building up edifices, who pays for what bonds, who's getting screwed, et cetera.
It's complicated.
It's always complicated. You take that normal layer of complication and you put it in a maze with no lights. That's what D.C. is.
Okay.
Just because of this weird federal oversight type deal. An oversight's not the right word.
There's no North Star, so to speak.
Exactly. So what you have when you have willing parties. And the major step that happened in this entire process, Linnell, the thing that was the Jaden Daniels to Noah Brown to beat the Bears was a congressman from Kentucky and the mayor of D.C. You wouldn't think these are normal bedfellows.
Right.
They're all of a sudden BFF totes. They're texting. They're finishing each other's sentences. They're on the same page. And this dude and the mayor decide, yeah, okay, I'll get you the land. Great, I want the land. Awesome. And a Hail Mary happens, and D.C. gets control of national parkland under the guise and the premise that it is ultimately, you know, with earmarked for a stadium and other things.
Yeah.
Taking what is a blight, what is an empty vessel, what is an in-the-way eyesore with nothing around it, really. There's a community kind of to the west, and the D.C. Army sort of is right there in the shadow of it. That's where the metro stop would be. But it's boarded up stuff. It's run down chain link fences a lot around it. It's just kind of this area that is ripe for all sorts of development. Let's say the team never existed. You would go, my God, this is
water. Do something with anyone.
This is waterfront property in the District of Columbia, for God's sakes. It's why growing up around here, that this spot on this side of the river where we are now in Southeast D.C., where you'd go, how is the only thing here a pile of salt, a car wash, and a McDonald's?
Yeah.
How is that it? How is that the only stuff that's here? This is waterfront property in the nation's capital.
And we can't do anything with it?
And we couldn't do anything? Yeah. And, well, no, this is decades of this. And there were a number of neighborhoods that have gone through renovations in my time in and around D.C. When I was in high school, if you drove to Union Station, you'd basically go down Mass Avenue from northwest towards southeast, mm-hmm. right? If you can picture the, I said it's the crow flies, but it's the car drives. You're heading from upper left to lower right, and Union Station's kind of in the middle. You could just go through red lights. Not because they didn't care about the law, but because if it stopped, you might be in danger.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. They just go ahead, man. It ain't worth it. So the world has changed in a lot of ways in that regard. I don't really know where I'm going with that. I guess other than to say that area has been in dire need of major substantive change for a long time. Here is an imperfect solution.
The stadium. But like, if you're Mayor Bowser...
And that's why this is happening. In other words, they'll go, we'll cut you right out, right?
Because if you're Mayor Bowser, so that's their leverage. It's like, well, we got the land anyway. We can do something with it regardless. Doesn't necessarily have to be a stadium. And if I'm Josh Harris and company, I'm looking at you in the face and going, well, why haven't you? You don't have any real plans to have this area developed to where it helps us out financially and it, you know, fixes a lot of the problems that ail this city. I just feel like if it's not going to be the stadium, and this is me talking from the perspective of like a fan that wants it there. If it's not going to be the stadium, D.C., then what else are we doing with the stuff? What else are we doing with that land that will get us a better return on our investment? Why are we playing hardball so much with the Commanders when they're in reality trying to do a good thing for us?
Well, so, but again, I don't want to make this like the football team's doing something totally altruistic. It's going to benefit, it benefits everybody.
It does, and I got to, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm saying it's not a charity. Yes. It's not the D.C. stadium charity where everybody is getting well. But yeah, it's the right thing, and they get that. So a couple other things that I want to give you some nuggets on. There are levers that Trump could pull, again, without getting directly involved. And this is from the Axios story. So the president appoints members to both the Commission on Fine Arts, which I don't think has anything to do with it specifically, and the National Capital Planning Commission, or the NCPC, which would then advise on the design. In fact, the NCPC is handling the Capital One Arena overhaul, which I didn't realize. That's a detail that I had no idea about.
So the renderings that we've seen were from them?
I guess.
Okay.
A 71-page report is thick with demands, like a lighting plan that's down to lumens and color temperature. I mean, it's like...
Details.
It's details, dude. So I just assumed, yeah, it's the, you know, DC whatever commission, but no. It's this NCPC that I've never heard of. But again, that shows you how complicated this stuff is.
Yes.
Somehow the Commission on Fine Arts, which is like, are we doing Swan Lake at the Kennedy Center? They're going to be involved in the stadium if they want it to be that. Anyway, the point is, there is a tangible, at least according to this, and real threat may not be the right word, but possibility of going, if you guys don't act right and do what we want, we will go over there. And you don't want that.
Yeah.
You don't want the Pandora's box of people that you may or may not like, may or may not be on their team. I don't care. I'm just telling you about the reality. We could put our big boy pantaloons on here and not get upset about the teams. I'm just saying, we'll go to the team, the opposite team that's in charge right now, and get this done without you. Real threat or negotiating? 800-636-1067. Do you buy it? Do you buy that this is a real strategy, a real threat, or is this just posturing for negotiating leverage? Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In for GP, got a troubling ranking for the local 53. We'll do that.
Another one.
We'll do that at 5 o'clock. I got some special news for Darius. We're going to pack a lot into this segment. First, want to jump to the phone super quick. Catch you up if you're just tuning in. There's kind of the pulse out there now. There's an Axios story. The team has stepped up their lobbying efforts, again, according to Axios, and basically, I don't want to say threatened, but made it clear that it's possible that the local D.C. government could be kind of cut out of this process when it comes to putting the stadium in D.C. Real threat or a little bit of bluster for negotiation? What do you think? Mo and Largo, what's up, man? You're on The Fan.
What's up, Mo?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I think the real question is how long does the mayor want to stay the mayor? Because I believe if she goes over the city's head, she might as well, she can cancel it. She will not be reelected because I know the people are not going for that. So I think that's what it really boils down to. How hard is she really willing to go for her legacy? Because, like I said, if she goes over their head, that's a wrap for her.
Well, appreciate you, dude.
That's a very interesting angle.
Well, but here's what I would say. It would cut her out of the process, too.
Right.
See what I'm saying? Like, so okay. She's not an opponent of it. She's their number one advocate. I mean, she's put her, you know what, on the table for years about this.
Yeah.
Right? And so this would basically be cutting. It's about the council. It's about the city. It's about approval. And basically saying, we're going to strip your ability, potentially, if we can come to some accord with, again, the feds who have, again, oversight's not the right word. I apologize for all my policy wonks out there taking a break from your podcast and being antisocial. But whatever it is, the feds, if they want, it sounds like, according to the Axios story and some of the things that I've read, could basically start flexing their muscle a little bit. Yeah, I know we leased it to you, but you didn't do anything, and now we're taking control back. I guess that's kind of the point of the story. But appreciate the thoughts on that. Before we get to the troubling ranking of a position group for Washington that I'm concerned about, Darius has some pretty cool news that you just shared with me during a commercial break. So when did you find out that this was going to be the case?
So a couple weeks back, I don't know, me and a couple of the friends were just randomly talking, and I don't know how it came up, but the fact came up that I had never been to a famous steakhouse establishment that I've heard about, you know, all my adult life.
Yep.
I don't remember hearing about it as a kid, honestly. But yeah, they found out that I've never been, and they were like, oh my God, bro, are you serious? Like, we have to take you. You're like, you have to go. There's just no way you can't live your life never being there. And then it came up early this week that we were going to go on Sunday to celebrate one of our friend's achievements. So pretty cool. I will be going for the first time.
Here we go.
Texas
Roadhouse, everybody.
There we go.
Texas Roadhouse. Yeah.
It's the best roll in the industry.
Yeah.
If you're talking about like restaurant game, I'm a big guy. I'm a big, Outback's bread. I love their pumpernickel.
Of course you do. Yeah. It's delicious.
Absolutely. But the rolls at Texas Roadhouse with the cinnamon spread, elite.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you know, now with the way social media is, I see it all the time. You always see like these food rankings and rankings of rolls and rankings. So I always see Texas Roadhouse mentioned. There's one in La Plata that I pass by when I go, you know, out to the great land of King George.
Mm-hmm. You're always going down there to King George.
Yeah, I have family past King George, so I go down there pretty frequent. There's another one in Bowie that I've seen occasionally, but other than that, I don't see them that often, so it's never really on the brain.
So the underscore game 836 is Darius's Twitter.
That'd be me. Terrible
the
Twitter handle.
The underscore game 836. What you really need to do is go many times.
Yeah, one time's not going to do it justice. I already know that.
Because you're going to go, oh, I should have got that, should have got that. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, you're going to Texas Roadhouse for the first time. What would you tell Darius to get?
Mm.
So my belief, and they've recognized this at Texas Roadhouse very, very well, anything is a side if you make it a side.
Ooh.
Right? So my philosophy, I introduced to the radio station, I think, I take credit for it as an innovator, the side of pizza, where you have a main dish, you get a sandwich or a sub or something like that, and you go, you want part of a pizza? And now all of a sudden that meat, bread, cheese, and sauce and the dough is a side. You have two slices of pizza to go with your sandwich or sub or whatever. Maybe it's four slices. Maybe it's an entire seven pizzas from Pupatella. You just keep eating and everyone looks at you like you're a fat, disgusting monster. They figured this out at Texas Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a side of ribs.
Oh my goodness.
Doesn't have to be that full entree of ribs. It could be a side.
It's a sidekick of ribs. So it'll be four bones, mm-hmm. but five ribs. You follow that?
Oh, of course I do.
Yeah. You could also major in the ribs. It's hard to go wrong here. So I love the Texas red chili that they have there. I also love the mac and cheese. And what I like to do is have them get a seedy motel room together. And just sort of see what happens.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You make them go together?
They go together.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And they fall in love every time. It's prom night, and she's like, I'm ready. You know what I mean? And that's what happens. They have all kinds of combos, Darius. So tweet Darius at the underscore game 836.
Yes.
What does he have to get at Texas Roadhouse?
Can I give you a must have to get?
Get a must.
I don't know if you've been to Outback, but Outback has a bloomin' onion. I think Texas Roadhouse calls it cactus something.
It's the cactus blossom.
It's the better version of the bloomin' onion.
Why do we have to compare?
No, yeah, I'm doing it. I am doing it. I'm comparing and contrasting. Because I want you to have the best possible time. Outback has to take one to the chin real quick. Their version of the bloomin' onion, the cactus jack, whatever the hell you call it, it is the superior appetizer.
All right. I like to hear that.
Okay, here's the problem. I'm sorry, Darius. Go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, what's the file on the rattlesnake bites? That's something
Again,
else I've
that's
heard
your
about.
Jalapeno and jack cheese served. I mean,
sounds good.
It doesn't get me going.
Little fried balls. And again, we'll all be adults here.
Yeah, we'll be adults.
Just be adults. They're potato skins, known as tater skins, are excellent.
I could major in that.
I mean, they're divine.
Yeah. They're good.
And we haven't even talked about the fried pickles. We haven't even had a conversation about the fried pickles yet.
That was the first thing Ryan brought up was the fried pickles.
It's the sauce that they do the cactus blossom with, and you're dipping fried pickles in it. And just it's the little, they're not the dimes, but like whatever, the silver dollar pickles.
All that tangy goodness.
Oh, it's incredible.
Could you imagine?
So salty. I haven't gotten to, the Debbie eggs.
Their appetizers are crazy.
Their appetizers are outstanding. Yeah. They do a... kind of the Friday's three for all, where you can get the combo appetizer, which is all the appetizers. You could pick a bunch of them if you can't decide. And people are like, oh, is that for sharing? And you go, no, and you hoard it. And if push comes to shove, you can lick each thing on the plate so that nobody else touches it.
So you can choose which appetizers you want. It doesn't have to be a set three.
Choose three options from boneless buffalo wings, fried pickles, rattlesnake bites, twisted mozzarella sticks, or tater skins, and choose two dipping sauces.
Wow.
Sorry. Welcome to the amusement park.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to the steak yet.
Oh, you get a country fried?
Yet. I think that's what I want to major in the steak. That's what I've heard great things about. Mm-hmm. So I do want to major in the steak. I mean, ribeye, of course. I'm sure there's other options, but why would I choose anything other than ribeye?
They have a good country fried steak. I don't know how you feel about that bit. Some people are in it. Some people are not.
It's fine. It wouldn't on my first trip.
Your first trip.
No. I'm excited, boys. I can't wait.
You should be so excited. So I'm begging you, eat too much. I'm begging you to eat this. In general, not my advice to everybody. I want you to eat to the point that you're uncomfortable.
Eat to the point where I consider calling out on Monday.
Yes.
Got it.
Yep. And I'm totally serious about it. I'm so jealous.
I hope CK didn't hear that.
We're just joking. It's jokes. I don't know how you choose. So I can when I go. I haven't been in a while, by the way. It reminds me. I need to go too. I might see you there. But when you go, it's because I had something in mind. You see what I'm saying?
Craving.
When I roll into McDonald's, it's not because I'm going. And what do they have?
Snack wraps.
I know what they have.
Yeah.
I know exactly what they have, and I had the number in mind already when I pull off the highway. Same deal for Texas Roadhouse, right? When I'm going, I want the strip, I want the mac and cheese and the Texas chili today, or I want the wings, tater skins, and the Dallas filet. Like you already know in your mind, going for the first time and not having a file on those things, I think would be really hard.
It is, which is why you have to go back soon.
All right,
soon.
I'll make sure that happens.
If you want to make me seem like a hater of Outback, go to Outback in between. Have their terrible version of the Cactus Jack or whatever the hell it's called.
Terrible so version. Black. Wow.
I know.
I mean, we got a break. We're going to talk during the break, speaking of that.
Let's do it.
Man, that's a little too far. A little too far. That's Linnell. I'm Danny. We're going to talk during the commercial break about the Bloomin' Onion.
Bloomin' Onion.
Pumpernickel bread.
I love pumpernickel.
Well, now you're trying to suck back up to him.
Well, there we go. If you're listening out there, Outback, I'm available.
That's Linnell who said that.
Yeah.
I'm Danny, and I love the Bloomin' Onion. A position group that I'm concerned about doesn't rank real high. We'll tell you about it.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.